Okay. So, how's the Co-Ray team doing this morning?
Great, man.
That's good.
I took NyQuil last night, and I'm feeling rested and kind of out of it. So.
Oh, my gosh.
NyQuil's good stuff.
Oh, man. You know, I haven't had any of that stuff in so long. I've been fortunate, but, yeah, if you ever get sick and you need a good night's rest, that's the stuff to take. Wow. So, guys, we covered a lot of stuff last time, and, you know, I also got your business plan. So we can spend some time, you know, talking about that. I'm not, you know, finished with my analysis of it, but I'll give you a little feedback on that when we get ready to kind of talk about it. So I appreciate all the hard work that you all have put into that. So what we want to do is, first of all, talk about your kind of agenda, some things that are on your mind. And I got your email, you know, indicating that you wanted to continue to plow through a basic review of some of the concepts. So I don't know if you all do this or not, but one of the things I do with my manual is I get these tabs, you know, full-length tabs, and I kind of have a notebook, and I have all my chapters tabbed out, but I actually speak from an outline, which is kind of my notes for each module, which is really good. I review them before I get on the call. And I find that to be very helpful. So if you all are ever, you know, thinking about doing something like that, that might be something that you want to think about doing if you haven't already done it. So let's start with your agenda first. What's on your mind for this week before we get into some material?
Yeah, the business plan, you know, trying to refine that, I guess, okay. Russ mentioned, and then just plowing in, and, I mean, let's get with it and make some progress, okay. So, you know, cleaning up the original implementation and try to make sure that's coming along and get to business growth.
Okay. All right. So let's kind of cover, I'm going to give you a little plug for commercial. The book Supernova Advisor Teams is out. You can get it on Amazon. I guess when I looked at Amazon, they had like 6 books left, but you can also get it on Wiley.com. And so all of the teaming kinds of things that you need to be thinking about are really right in that book. How you onboard a new team member, your team vision, mission statement, your elevator pitch, how to get your head into the game in terms of, you know, embracing this change that's kind of coming down. So, and it ends with a chapter on wealth management in a digital age, just to start to kind of prep you for this high tech, high touch world that we're living in. So, and I think I may have sent you a link to an article that was done in FA Magazine, which was a review on it. So I think that'll be an interesting complement, because you guys are in the formation stages of your team. It deals with the team agreement. It's got the elements of a team contract in there. So all of the useful items that you'll need to fully, you know, fortify your team. So That's one dynamic, Supernova teams. The other dynamic is getting a solid footing in Supernova. I think we went through a pretty good review the last time. I feel like we had covered the week one module, which by way of review, and interrupt me anytime, by the way. So there's no more A, B, C, and D clients. Every client gets treated the same. The minimum service level is 1242, a plan, rapid response to problems. Okay? Now you're doing this because you're trying to provide this client experience so that you can begin to start to position for referrals, position your COIs, your mastermind group. So everybody's, you're going to be differentiating yourself in the marketplace based on your service level. That's why that's so critical that be launched. Okay. Introduction to segmentation. Okay. You got down to your core. You already know 80% of, 20% of your clients are giving you 80% of your revenue. And I think, Rodney, it was you that said, hey, look, I got 12 core and the rest are butlers. So your butlers are going to get a 4-1 service. Okay?
All right.
So that's how you're going to position them on your schedule. Everything gets scheduled. All right. Your absolute minimum. That's the real average of your practice. Okay. And then your target minimum. That's the average of the top 20%. So if you took those 12 and you looked at the average of their assets, that's your target. Okay? That's your minimum target. So do you know what your target is?
Yes.
Rodney and Russ. Okay. Throw the number out to me.
750.
Let me hear your number. Okay. 750. Great. Perfect. Okay. So exceptions can be made between your absolute minimum of 750, okay, and then your target. What are you going to target?
Well, our absolute minimum, I think we said was 350, and then the target would be 750.
Okay. All right. So we got that situated then. So your minimum 350, your target 750. All right. Okay. Now, your maximum number of accounts that you will work with, including your three butlers, is how many? Or including your butlers is how many?
I'd say 100 max. Ideally, I mean, I'd like to have 80 of, or 70 of...
the 12 what you have, right? Okay.
With an average of 3 million assets under management per client.
Okay. All right, so now you've got your numbers situated. You understand the butlers, and we're not making an effort to try to get more butlers. So we want to be still giving them, you know, excellent service. Those that have potential to move into that asset level, everybody gets communicated the service level and your account minimums. Okay. Client screens. Okay. Remember, you know, the reasons you want to take a client, you're going to look at accounts by production. You're going to look at the value of their assets. You're going to look at likability, trust. Do they accept your recommendations? Okay. And profitability. You know, because that impacts how you spend your time. You can't be billing yourself out when you go through that exercise on your comp. You can't be billing yourself out at $50 an hour. Your time's more valuable. Okay? You're going to look at them for opportunities for future growth. Okay? So if they're in a profession where the incremental growth in income and bonuses is outstanding, well, you know, you certainly want to kind of keep them as clients. And you want to look and see if they're a center of influence. Can they be educated on the type of client that you want to have? So you have to educate the type of relationships that you want going forward. Okay, but the first thing is you have to believe that those are the type of relationships that you want. Once you believe that, then you can communicate the type of clients you would enjoy working with. And you're going to be communicating that to your centers of influence, the top 20% of your book, and your mastermind groups. Okay. Then there's the rule of common sense, which is you're going to keep a client because it makes sense to do so for whatever reason that you come up with. Okay. Are you with me so far?
Absolutely.
Okay. Then introducing the service model to clients. I suggest, and we've talked about this, in terms of how you articulate the service model. You know, we're building our practice. We want to focus on providing an exceptional service to our clients. In that regard, we have 12 contacts per year, with 4 of those contacts being reviews, 2 of them are in person, and 2 are by phone. We provide a 1-hour response to problems with a 24-hour resolution, okay, and a financial plan and intergenerational planning, okay? That is your mantra. Okay. Now, client says, wow, that seems like a lot of contact. Well, I'm sure the first thing that you're thinking about here, Mr. Jones, is that on every call, I'm going to try to sell you something. Quite the contrary. We found that when our clients' other needs are met, that they feel better about the dialogue, and part of our responsibility is over time is to educate you about the many different investment opportunities that may exist that might make sense. It could be in the area of personal finance and mortgages, long-term care, retirement distributions and tax and limitation strategies, but we want to make sure that we take the time to educate you on such topics. Okay. Feel comfortable with that?
Yes, get it.
Okay. Now, so they're going to ask, well, you know, why do we have to schedule the time? Can I just arbitrarily interrupt you whenever I feel like it? Well, you're going to say, look, we value their time. You're going to be courteous. You're going to talk about action steps. You're going to provide an executive summary after each call. Okay? This is what we talked about. This is what we agreed to. And these are some of the next steps. Okay. Why once per month? All right. So let me just throw this out to you rather than tell it to you again. Why do we want to contact them once a month? Anybody?
Just take care of their needs. Educate them. Make sure we're executing on the plan.
Okay. That's a solid reason. And that's good. Now, but there's some other things that are going on externally that really impact investments. This is what we find. Clients have life events, birth of grandkids, death of a family member, inheritance, sale of a business, mortgage refinance. Then there's the whole geopolitical environment, which sometimes is very stable and sometimes is very volatile. You know, I don't want to call you 3 months after the volatility has already passed by. And sometimes the call is to give you reassurance. Does that make sense to you, Mr. Jones? And then there's the story. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. So here's, we tell them that your life is happening. That's one of the reasons, you know, births and deaths and dynamic world, things that impact investors. That's why we need to be in contact, you know, every month.
Yeah, it's not like things don't change anymore. So, I mean, it's the frequency of change, in my opinion, is unbelievable. I mean, I'm just looking at just climate change, and what happens when you have a freeze in Florida and the impact to the agricultural environment, or droughts in California, the impact that it has on portfolios and earnings, the geopolitical environment. You can probably sit down when you just stop and think about it. You can write down 5 or 6 impactful things which create reasons to talk to your clients. Okay? Okay, so that's one of the reasons. And then, of course, there's the story of the FA who didn't talk to a client for 3 or 4 months. Client sold a business with a $5 million, you know, infusion of cash. The money went to Goldman, didn't go to the FA. And the FA finally got the message that, wow, had I been in touch, I could have had an additional $5 million worth of assets to work with. So that's your underlying reason for yourself. So you got to do it for personal, selfish reasons, and then you got to do it for the client set of reasons. Okay? And hopefully those two kind of come together and give you the reason why, boy, we better be in touch. Okay? Because believe me, if you are not in touch, there are people clawing at the back door of your relationships. And let me tell you who they are. They're personal bankers. They're insurance agents. They're CPAs that you don't have relationships with, that are trying to move those clients to advisors that they're comfortable with. Okay. So, that's your rationale. That's almost like why you're doing Supernova. Okay, so your communications are organized, and you've got your 12, 18-month agendas, and based on meaningful conversation, dealing with important issues of the client and issues that are important that they never saw as important. Okay? All right. Busy people schedule everything. So this is going to eliminate your phone tag. Don't you hate it? You call up, they're not there. There's an opportunity or there's something that needs to be done, they're not around. And then they call you back, you're not around. A week goes by, they're on vacation, they come back, and whatever needed to be done at that time goes out the window. So you gotta schedule everything. And what I want you to be able to do is to be able to be comfortable articulating why you got to be in touch with your clients. Okay? I want them to be able to enthusiastically endorse you for a whole set of reasons. My advisor pays attention to me, my needs, the needs of my family. He is organized. We talk on a regular basis. It's scheduled. He sends me an executive summary after each call. He has a list of enthusiastically endorsed individuals that I can utilize when I need to in the area of estate planning, tax, insurance, the liability side of my balance sheet, whatever, all the good things that you're capable of doing. Okay. So now we're reinforcing this rationale. Okay. Once clients understand your minimum, they will bring you more in the way of assets, especially when you start articulating that here's my minimum, these are my targets. I didn't know that. Well, you know, we can bring in, if you're going to do all this for it, we can bring in more assets. So that's one area in which advisors that go through Supernova get a productivity lift. Okay. Stair step to the stars. Once you segment, that's not the end of it. You're going to continuously, over time, raise your minimum, raise your targets. And it's kind of a stair step process. Okay? You're going higher with each step. You're going to reassign clients that you've outgrown. Okay? Clients still receive the Supernova service, so you have to have a relationship in the office where those clients would go to. And they've got to understand Supernova, and if they can't deliver the service, they can't get the referrals from you internally. You don't want the client to receive a lesser service. Okay? So the key is that you have to have them trained. So that's kind of everything you needed to know in the first session. So I'm going to pause for questions. And then I'm going to go right into the second one. How was that for review?
Good. The Butler people, obviously they're not 1242. What are we communicating to those Butler people? I'm trying to find
out. Well, they get on the schedule. They get 4 contacts per year. And a one review. They get the 4-1 service.
Okay, so we just basically tell the 4-1 service that we set their expectations and that works fine.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they get scheduled so they don't fall through the cracks. Okay. 3 Butlers equals one of your clients. Okay. All right, so that tells you, you know, how many of those folks that you can handle versus the folks that are in the top 20% that you really want to be working with. Okay.
You know, I have to admit, that's the point I've always missed hearing this. It never made sense to me. If 1 equals 3, then that hurts you. Because I'm always, well, why don't you just have 300 Butlers? It'd be the same, but you're saying, because you used up 3 spots for the revenue and footprint of only 1, you're down to 97 because you used up 1 of your keys and, with a Butler spot.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah,
because
I literally never grasped that.
Yeah. And that's because you only have so much time.
Okay, got it.
Okay, good. All right. So in the second week, or the second module, you know, it was all about the Supernova standard, your minimum and your max, just kind of more repetition on that, rapid response, 24-hour resolution, We talked about, you know, reassigning clients if need be, that everybody works the same, everybody's treated the same. But you are trying to build that top 20% of your practice. Okay. So, you're going to get some reactions. You know, what we offer is, how does that sound? They're going to say, you know, wow, if you really do it, I've heard stories where, you know, clients are saying, you know, I was thinking about taking my $5 million elsewhere, but if you're going to do all that, I'm staying. Okay? So you want to put this wall of confidence around your best clients, okay? Because those are the ones that are going to travel in the kind of circles that can open up possibilities for you for other relationships. Okay, we talked about the rule of reciprocity, where, you know, if you give something, you're going to get something of equal value in return. And remember, you, and this happens to you. You'll take somebody to dinner, you and the wife, and you're doing it either at your club, at the restaurant of your choice, and dinner's on you. And at the end of dinner, they say, wow, we had such a wonderful time and engaged in conversation. Next time, let us do it. Okay? That's reciprocity. Okay? So, you'll find that your clients, when you differentiate yourself and provide that exceptional service, they'll reciprocate. When you provide an excellent service and one day you can't be available and you've got to change the appointment, they're going to understand. They're going to be forgiving. When you have product failure, market failure, but you've been in touch all along, you get forgiveness. Okay? All right. Centers of influence. They get a folder. They get treated like clients. Some of them may be clients, but they're out there in the market. They travel in the circles. They like you. They like the way you do business, and they're willing to help you. You're going to meet with them once per month. And in exchange for the referrals that you give them, you're going to do nice things for them. It could be tickets to the theater. It could be dinner with you. But those are the relationships. You know, I used to...
Curtis,
go ahead.
We had this come up. We were trying to do this. So we make a folder. It's our folder. We don't make them a folder.
Yeah, you make a folder for the Center of Influence. They get one.
Yeah, we couldn't figure that out. Okay, so they get a folder. We get a folder. Ours is the same color as theirs in that case?
Yeah, I'm not too preoccupied with the color. You want to be able to, but yeah, because you want to be able to distinguish between, when you pull a folder out, who's the center of influence.
Okay.
Okay, so.
They could get one of any color, but I don't think we have a template, or I'm not aware of it, of what we give them, what we're trying to, you know, maybe like our joint brochure, I don't know what else to put in that one.
Okay. I would get that, once you get that enthusiastic endorsement model in there, I would put that in there.
Okay.
I would certainly put that in there. In the very back of the manual, there is a folder for Center of Influence. The first page is information about the Center of Influence. That's the advisor's folder. Okay. And but it's things like the mastermind group, you know, it's contact information, marketing information about the people in your group, And second page, list of introductions given or received, meeting dates, times, you know, and a blank line paper for notes. Okay? So it doesn't have a lot in there.
Thank you.
Okay. So, let's see. Segmentation, and you want to educate your centers of influence as to your ideal client, the people that you want to work with. Okay? You know, again, we're differentiating. They can't be seen as you'll take anything and anybody. You know, back in the day, when I first started, if they were walking and breathing, we'd open up an account. But, you know, we've learned this, you know, over time that you just can't do that. Segmentation. You know, defining your ideal client, being able to communicate that. Can you define your ideal client right now? You know, and your niche market and where they come from. Do they come from country clubs? Do they come from charities? Do they come from HR departments? You know, what commonality do they share? Okay. And there's got to be a match. And some people may be clients and centers of influence. Okay. Let's see. Now, I want to just spend a moment talking about letting go of clients. That's going to be hard, I think, initially. But if you think of it this way, that if you can't give them the level of service, they're better off working with someone that can deliver a better level of service. So you do it in person. You can do it by phone. You can do it by letter, which is the third kind of way. But you're explaining your service model and how many relationships you're capable of working with. And the purpose is to improve the client experience. You want to listen to them. Some might be sad. Some might be happy due to the lack of an extraordinary experience. And some may ask, what will it take for me to stay? More assets. Well, look, I've got something over here at Fidelity. I've got this over here at Schwab. You know, then that's an option. If they want to stay, they're going to bring in more assets. Now, that takes, you're not getting uppity. Remember, in the back of your mind, you can only deliver an exceptional service to only so many people. And the client might say, well, who do you recommend? And they may also say, are you too big for your britches? In more ways than one. And your response is, it really is about the service experience. Okay. Now, I know we spent a lot of time talking about niche markets. Natural. That's what you came into the business with. And I heard motorcycle clubs and things of that nature. Your target. It's similar to the clients that you have, but they meet your minimums. They could be affinity groups, people you like to work with. I remember the conversation left with this employment law lawyer. And when you, and I sent you, I think maybe an article, maybe two, but I get these every day. And when you, and I thought about this, and I took some notes on it the other day, and it had to do with when you're establishing a niche market, you know, I don't want to hit you up with a folder, but you know, you might start assimilating and accumulating articles and information about that market.
Okay.
You know, for example, there's so many changes going on with small business owners, what they have to know about HR issues, harassment, immigration. There's so many issues that they have to be up to speed on. So having an employment lawyer in your back pocket is a good thing. So understand the topics that that business owner has to deal with. Now, they got all kinds of, you know, balance sheet, income statement kinds of issues. So there's the financial piece. There's the HR piece. There's the operations piece. And there's like trade journals on all this stuff. Entrepreneur magazine, where you're clipping out an article and say, hey, Joe, I thought you might like to read this. You know, that is cultivating your niche market. Okay. You could do the same if I changed it to doctors. You could do the same if I changed it to, you know, white-collar executives, especially those that are interested in getting promoted. You know, what are they learning in terms of the things that they need to develop their leadership skills? And you clip out an article that you read in the Harvard Business Review that, Bill, I thought this might be of interest to you, given your stature at the company. Okay? So that's how you add value. It's different than, you know, you got two FAs. One at this firm, firm A, one at firm B. One said every time he calls, it's all about the portfolio. The other one is saying, hey, here's something of interest, given your position at the company, that might help you grow. Or here's a research report on the industry that you're in that I thought you might want to read. That's adding value over and above your practice. Now, if you have 400 clients, you can't do that. If you got 50 niche markets out there, you can't do that. Okay. So, have we defined your niche markets at this point? What are they? Who are they?
Well, the first was just simply business owners themselves.
Okay.
I think we didn't have too much trouble agreeing to that. The second one, we have sort of the accidental medical niche, but it's just because we've done some networking and things like that and happen to have some clients that are there. It's nothing purposeful.
Okay.
So the I think what you're saying is employment law could almost be a niche all by itself.
Well, what I'm saying that's certainly it can happen on several levels. It can be a center of influence. It could be a part of a mastermind group, and it could be part of that value and consultation in your enthusiastically endorsed model, where you can make that referral to the business owner.
Yeah, okay, I see.
Yeah, in other words, there's this whole new directive that impacts small businesses, and your lawyer is up to speed on it. You send an article to the business owner. By the way, I've got a great relationship with a guy that specializes in this area and is willing to give you a free consultation. That's where you're using the enthusiastically endorsed model.
Okay, and that's more like what that article you sent had to do with it. So for the business owner, they might have used a transactional attorney from their chamber of commerce over the years or whatever. We're talking about a level of specialization that we can bring to bear with an introduction.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
Great.
Perfect. All right. So, again, you know, identifying those niche markets. So you got the businesses, you got people in the medical profession. You know, I, when I was writing this book, Wharton did a study on trauma surgery teams and, on how functional leadership on the team shifts. So, a friend of mine is a head of trauma surgery at the University of California, and I decided I would interview him for the book to fully understand how leadership shifted. And when he presented his curriculum vitae, I think I needed a briefcase to carry it because the guy had more credentials and experience and also relationships out in the community that were unbelievable. So if I was a financial advisor, I'm thinking about this person as, God, I'd like to have an account with him. But then I started looking at him as a center of influence, you know, in terms of where he maneuvers, political, medical, so on and so forth. So, you know, when you look at a client, look at it from a lot of different angles. Not just, oh, I'm going to open up an account, but where do these folks travel? All right. Make a footnote. We really got to spend some time talking about social media as one of the prospect methods, which we identify seven. Having the social media component is part of that. So when we get to client acquisition, I think we can do a deeper dive into the social media component. Okay. Branding. Okay, branding. Branding has to do with, are you discoverable out in the marketplace? Are you making noise? Do people know who you are? Are you differentiated out there in the marketplace? So the quality of your brand is based on your worst clients. So I want you to think about that. I want you to think about part of your brand is giving them the kind of the medical folder. It's not high tech. You give them the two-hole punch. You give it to your clients and centers of influence. They're going to say you thought of everything. Helps give them peace of mind. Okay. All right. Any questions on that so far?
I think you're saying low tech is on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
To differentiate versus the trends of the day, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm big in tech. I believe in high tech, but high touch. So if the tech starts to separate you from touching your client, you know, in meaningful ways, then the tech has kind of maybe gone too far to the left. Okay? So you've got to get that balance to where you can get that touch.
Okay.
Okay? So it's kind of like, I mean, I forget who I was on the phone with the other day. Oh, I'm going to tell you. It was MetLife, and in regards to this retirement annuity, I dialed them up, and the music starts blaring, push one for this, push two for that, push three for this, push four for that, and you better not make a mistake, because if you do, you got to go back through the whole menu again. and then you hold on, then you finally get the person that you think you should have, and they can help you, and they direct you to another number. The music plays again. You know the story. High tech, okay, but did I feel like I was touched by a human being? No. People are getting tired of that. So you got to achieve the right balance between the two. Okay. All right. So COIs are people like your CPAs, other professionals, attorneys, realtors, business brokers. You know, I was speaking with a realtor the other day, and they had a probate attorney in their back pocket and put them on the phone on a conference call. And I was trying to make the decision between the two. One out-hustled the other and provided more value. They both could do the job. They both were good. But one just out-hustled the other in terms of value. So I said, look, if it's a jump ball, who do I go with? Like them both. Go with the one that can provide more value. So if it's a jump ball between you and somebody else, I want you chosen because of the value you provide. Okay. So, let's stop right there. That takes you through two reviews. And the next thing I wanted to do, first, let me pause. Anything resonating, anything that we've said kind of going through this kind of the second time around hits you a little differently?
I wanted to clarify real quick. Branding, you said just a couple of good notes that you said, and I missed one. It said, do people know who we are? And what was the other? Do people know what we do?
Yeah, in terms of how you differentiate yourself in the marketplace.
And you're saying when they're out looking, can they find us in that message?
Yeah, can people find you?
So you're not saying, you know, have we taught our masterminds and our COIs and our clients who we are and our service model? You're saying when, in the context of social media, you know, if a curious person wants service and advice, can they even find it?
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. And that's about, you know, really elevating, you know, your brand.
Okay.
Yeah, and then oftentimes, yeah, go ahead.
For me, feedback loop is I have that, you know, seven reasons for failure. This mm-hmm. that you have, one, of course, is failure to segment or failure to, I think it's segment.
Yeah, failure to segment is one of the failure points. Mm-hmm.
So I guess this call has helped me realize to a greater degree how important it is. Even though you told us.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't necessarily stick the first time. And, you know, we're throwing a lot at you. But, you know, and because you're also trying to work some of this stuff as well. So, so no worries. No worries. All right. Let's, I want to spend a few minutes on the business plan. I think on vision, okay? Let's talk about that for a moment. Vision, that's the end game. That's aspirational. It's like, who do you want to be? Who do you want to be known as? Okay, and then that becomes your vision.
So it's a public, statement. It's open to the public to see that.
Exactly. It's going to resonate with each team member. This is who we are. Okay? It's the end game. You're not there yet, but it's aspirational. Okay? So, I'm going to send you, if you look at that business plan, I think I put kind of a sample vision statement in there.
Right.
Okay? So it's the end game. It's your dream. This is what the two of you are owning. You know, I think if you went back and looked at McDonald's vision, I mean, or Disney, they call everybody cast members, and it's about, it's where an adult can also go and be a kid again. I mean, you know, they got this vision of what that experience ought to be like for the people that come and visit their theme park. When clients come and meet with you, you know, they're going to receive this holistic wealth management client experience. That's what they're going to get from you. So your vision should be, you know, incorporating that. It's all about an experience. Okay. Purpose. You know, I think I like the kind of the language and the dialogue that you do in your purpose. Your purpose is, why do you exist? Why are you there? Who are you there for? Okay? And I think you say it in here. Okay. So I'm okay with your purpose. And keep in mind, each of these things will go through an evolutionary process over time. So if I says, hey, what's the purpose of your team? Find the best investments for our clients? Oh, I can go to Schwab and get that. I can go to, you know, UBS and get that. Okay. We want to help these clients in their journey. I like that. What does that mean? Okay. Team value prop. Okay. I like the first bullet. How do you offer value? What value do you offer? We help clients evaluate why they have what they have, if it makes sense for their specific situation to move forward with the plan, portfolio, and process to help them make life better. Okay. I'm always about a little simplicity. So what value do you provide? Now, maybe a better way to understand your value is to ask a few clients what did they value in the relationship, and maybe they're going to say I helped this client get a proper will and trust arrangement, just basically organize their life. Then his wife passed away. And then she passed away, the adult kids who I know came up to me and say, you know, our dad said that you organized his life for the next generation, that you helped him put everything in the right perspective. So when you get that feedback, that's your value prop. Okay? So shorten this one up. You got a lot in there, but shorten it up into one, no more than two sentences. Okay. 30-second elevator pitch, and I think we'll stop from that. So the whole elevator pitch was designed for you to enter the elevator, and by the time you got to the 12th floor, to be able to articulate what it is you do. Okay, so you're at the museum gala, and you got your spouses, and somebody is introducing a new couple to you, and you're standing up, and you got a glass of champagne in your hands at this gala, and you're introduced to this guy. Look, I wanted to introduce you to to Bob Rodney, and he's an attorney with the firm of such and such and such and such. And your response is, Bob, what's the nature of your practice? He says, well, I specialize in tax minimization strategies and putting forth the right estate plans for clients so that they can pass wealth to the next generation. Those are certainly services that we can use in our practice. Practice. What's the nature of your practice? Now, what are you going to say? We specialize in holistic wealth management and helping clients reach their dreams and goals. And we find that our clients value us helping them keep as much as they make. We can get together and talk about some mutual interest next week. So something along those lines is your elevator pitch. Very brief, succinct, and to the point, that begs interest. How's that resonate?
That's helpful.
Okay. So I want you to get that thing down to 30 seconds. You got a lot of stuff in here. Okay? And it's all good. It's all backup material and discussion. But I want that left hook that slays the dragon about what you do, that compels somebody to want to work with you. Okay? So the elements are there. Condense them down to maybe one, two sentences. Okay, I'm going to stop there. And next session, let's go through your 5-star model analysis. Let's go through 3 and 4. It's a lot of stuff. But I thought when I started to look at your 5-star model and your planning initiatives and objectives, I thought you did a pretty good job with that. You put a lot of time, effort, and energy into this. So that looked pretty good. Your forecast analysis, your client acquisition goals, all of that. And now you as a team need to sit down and look at your game board once a week. So it's process and organization that you continue to do. All right. Questions about what you value today? What did you get out of today's session?
Practical action items, things we need to, that will help us get rid of more of the clutter. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good. You know, for me, the end game for you guys is that I help you understand process, that I get you organized, are you positioned to articulate your value, and do you start to begin to build, you know, this practice into something huge? That's what we're headed toward. Okay. And so far, I think you all are grasping the materials very well. Your questions are always really, really good. And you know, you're always free to clarify any point via email. And so we got your template for a business plan. That's great. And we're going to stay on that. Because I think when there is a team coming together such as yours, when you're working on this together, you're going to get unity of purpose. Okay. All right. Any final questions before we close out today?
No, sir.
Don't think so.
All right. Well, look, you guys keep plugging here. I think you're really on track. And, you know, it's going to continue to, you know, to get better. So I look forward to, you know, chatting with you on our next call.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.